The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
With changes to the law prohibiting the identification of child homicide victims taking legal effect last Friday, we had hoped to bring you one grieving mother's story on that day. 3 months ago, a man was handed a life sentence for murdering her son, but she wasn't able to speak publicly about her boy afterwards because of a Court of Appeal ruling that put to bed any ambiguity surrounding Section 252 of the Children's Act. It ruled that the protections enshrined in that piece of legislation for child victims and witnesses in court proceedings also applied to deceased children. Have a listen to what she said to reporters outside court after her son's killer was jailed back in February.
I deserve to be able to leave this court today and tell the world about my wonderful son. The kind, caring, loving, talented little boy my son is. His name and his legacy deserves to be out there for all the world to see and hear. I do not want my boy to only be remembered for how his life was ended.
Well, despite the amended law taking effect, we still couldn't introduce her to you last week because of a court order specific to this case, which remained in place. An application to have it lifted was supposed to be heard on Friday, but it was adjourned until today. Our courts correspondent, Frank Graney, joins us now with an update. Good morning, Frank.
Good morning, Pat.
So, what happened?
Well, after what was supposed to be a liberating day for this woman last Friday turned into a disappointing one, I am delighted to report that the order has now been lifted. The judge adjourned it last week. We spoke about this on Friday out of what he described as an abundance of caution due to the fact that the DPP didn't have a barrister in court last Friday. The lawyers of the boy's killer wanted time to take instructions from their client. It's all sorted now, though, I'm glad to say. The application was made, the order was lifted without objection, which is a huge relief to the grieving parents in this case.
So it means you're now in a position to tell us who we heard about in that clip, who the kind, loving, caring and talented young boy was.
Oh, Pat, it would be my absolute pleasure. Her name is Sonia Elmer, and I feel privileged to finally be able to tell you and your listeners today on her behalf that the wonderful son she's talking about is her son, Brooklyn Colbert. That recording that you played was taken on my phone outside the Criminal Courts of Justice back in February, shortly after Brooklyn's uncle, Sonia's half-brother, a man called Patrick Dillon, was handed a life sentence for murdering Brooklyn in Limerick 2 years ago. We carried her message on that day, but, you know, as you mentioned, we weren't able to broadcast any of those names at the time because of Section 252 of the Children Act. Thankfully, sense has prevailed. Order has since been restored, so we can once again give parents like Sonia a platform to share their stories if they so wish.
So what exactly happened to Brooklyn?
Well, on November 3rd, 2019, at a house just off Shanabooley Road in Ballynanty, County Limerick, Brooklyn's uncle, Patrick Dillon, stabbed him multiple times. We heard at the sentence hearing that they had spent much of that day together. And on that day, they bumped into several people who spoke to Gardaí afterwards and said that they didn't notice anything out of the ordinary. They said they both seemed in good form that day. Patrick Dillon handed himself into Gardaí afterwards, and he initially claimed that he had been hearing voices in his head for years, and that on that day, one of these voices, Henry, convinced him to kill Brooklyn. He was assessed by medical experts who found no evidence of psychosis. He eventually pleaded guilty to murder, and as I mentioned, he was jailed in February. Brooklyn met a terrible end. You know, you wouldn't wish it on your worst enemy, let alone this sweet and innocent young boy who had his whole life ahead of him. And I don't think it's appropriate to go into any more detail in relation to how he died, because I feel today isn't about that. Today is about giving Sonia a platform to finally speak publicly about her wonderful son, to tell us all how he lived and what a special boy he was. You know, I've been in touch with Sonia over the past few weeks, and I must say it has been a real pleasure getting to know her and getting to know Brooklyn through those chats. Her face lights up whenever she talks about him. They were the best of pals, you know, they had a very close bond. And in this clip that we're going to share with you now, she kindly shared her earliest memories of Brooklyn with me.
Like, my first memory of him, obviously, is the first time that I seen Brooklyn, and I instantly fell in love with him, you know. Brooklyn was always a happy child, even as a baby, you know. He was very popular. We went to Spain one time, me and his father, and Brooklyn, we went to Spain. Everyone knew Brooklyn, you know, and he's about four at that time. And they all knew him by his name. They just fell in love with him. If you met Brooklyn once, you'd always remember him. You know, he just had that aura about him. He had that little lovable, he was a little lovable character, you know, really entertaining, you know, no fear. He'd have on a life jacket and be jumping in over the pier at 4 years of age into the water and then the Rossi. And, you know, it was just so, such beautiful memories from such a young age. He was really affectionate, loved animals. He loved cuddles, and he was very soft and very funny when he was, from when we can remember, from when he could walk, he was dancing and dancing around the house, and even to school, you know, his teachers, his friends, everybody just had a little spark for him. I actually have a scrapbook that the school made for me, and memories from the children in the school. And in one of them, his friend went to the bathroom, and when he came back, Brooklyn had his lunch yet, a sandwich yet. And he asked him, what did he do? And Brooklyn said, I saved you the torture of eating your mother's cooking, do you know? And like, he was just so witty, you know, and so funny. And he'd always make you laugh, you know? So, I mean, you couldn't really give out to him for, you know, like it was a bold thing to do, but, you know, behind it, we were laughing, you know? And that's kind of how the life progressed with Brooklyn, just always happy memories, you know.
What a remarkable woman Sonia is, and it certainly sounds like herself and Brooklyn had a wonderful relationship.
Oh, they really did, Pat. You know, they did everything together. Sonia and Brooklyn's father, Wayne Colbert, broke up a few years ago, but they remained good friends afterwards. And Wayne played a huge role in Brooklyn's life after the breakup. He's actually a very well-known soccer player in the area. He's played for the likes of Limerick FC, Athlone Town and Shamrock Rovers. And from what Sonia told me, it sounds like Brooklyn picked up some fancy footwork from his dad, and not just on the football pitch.
He would have loved the soccer. He would have been doing soccer from a very young age with his father, you know, and he'd always be out training with his father as well. He went to Liverpool a few times with his dad. He loved Liverpool. Yeah, he loved Liverpool and the players. He'd name them all off, and he'd name what they were doing on the field. And when there was big matches on, he'd go up to his dad and they'd have, you know, they'd make a big thing out of it, or else they'd go to Liverpool and watch the big games. He was an old soul, you know. He was like one of the boys, you know, went off with his father and, you know, cool out like, you know. Then he started liking the boxing, but he used to do both of them. He used to do boxing and he used to play soccer for the local soccer team, Ballinlenty Rovers, and he played with Pike Rovers. And he used to do boxing in a boxing club, Coppers Christie Boxing Club. I was like, we'll do this together. So we joined boxing together, and that was absolutely amazing, you know. And he had no problem going in with me, you know. He wasn't embarrassed to be going in boxing with his mother, and he'd teach me a few moves. I'm so grateful that we had those connections and we did those things together, you know, that we have those memories. You know, he was very, very active.
Teaching you some moves in the boxing ring, was it you teaching him the moves on the dance floor?
I'd say he got that from his father now as well. He'd be a bit of a groover, you know. He was actually on TikTok before I even knew TikTok existed. I know it's very, very popular now. But he used to go up into his room, and he's loads of TikToks made, you know. And nobody really knew about them at that time. So, yeah, he's a right little entertainer.
Sonia seems so much at ease sharing those cherished memories about Brooklyn with you. She also delivered a really emotional and powerful victim impact statement at the sentence hearing in February. I suspect that must have been very tough.
Yeah, but you know what? Funnily enough, she didn't seem too nervous when she delivered it. I mean, when you consider who was in the dock over her shoulder, Patrick Dillon, her half-brother, Brooklyn's uncle, and what he had taken from her, you know, of course he would have forgiven her for being a bit nervous or for maybe passing the statement to someone else to read it out on her behalf, but she didn't. She told me she didn't feel nervous because she felt Brooklyn's presence that day, you know, helping her to get through it, keeping her calm. Talking about Brooklyn comes very easy to Sonia, you know, but she said that she really struggled when it came to sitting down and writing about all the things that Patrick Dillon had robbed from him. You know, he was 11 years of age, Brooklyn. He missed out on becoming a teenager, starting secondary school, you know, maybe girlfriends, kids. And that was heartbreaking for Sonia to think about. And I remember at the sentence hearing, she handed the judge a framed photograph before she delivered her statement. You don't see that very often. So I asked her about that.
I wanted to put a face to Brooklyn, you know. I wanted the judge to see exactly the boy that I was speaking about, and he could put an image to what I was reading out. You know, it would be more personal. This is our little boy, you know, that was taken so cruelly. It was a picture of him in his school uniform. He had a beautiful smile in his eyes, or big brown eyes gazing up. It was really, really nice.
Now, as we mentioned earlier, Frank, the law that was in place at the time of Patrick Dillon's sentencing prohibited the identification of Brooklyn. So it must have been very difficult for Sonia not to be able to tell the world about Brooklyn outside the court after that verdict.
Oh, it really was, Pat. You know, she described it as heartbreaking. Sonia only found out about the law a week before the sentence hearing, and it crushed her. You know, you also have to remember that the law also protected Patrick Dillon from being named and shamed, albeit unintentionally. His name obviously couldn't be revealed because it wouldn't have taken much for someone to figure out who the victim was if he was named. And that was something I asked Sonia about too. But first, here she is talking about her experience outside court that day after he was jailed.
I just felt that Brooklyn has been taken away from me, and now our memories, they were silenced. I couldn't speak about him, and I had to block my face. And, you know, it was a traumatic experience in itself. How could this protect Brooklyn? I couldn't understand this. This wasn't protecting Brooklyn. It was protecting him. I should be allowed to speak about him, and I will speak about him, you know, and I want to always do things in Brooklyn's legacy, and I don't want him to be forgotten. He's too special. To be shut off and not be able to speak about our children. And it's a massive trauma on top of the trauma that you're experiencing already. It's just, it's heartbreaking. My thoughts are always on Brooklyn and the life that I lived with Brooklyn. But I think that it's only right that he should be publicly named for what he's done, and that people should know him for what he is, you know, and his face should be out there for the world to see. For what he'd done. Like, that man took everything from me and from Brooklyn, and from the world, from the community, to Brooklyn's friends, to his people that didn't even know Brooklyn were so affected by what happened. And for someone to have do such an evil act to a little boy that was so pleasant, that trusted him, you know, that would probably have looked up to him. I'm so confused of how somebody could do that. It's just, there's no words for it, that somebody could have that much evil in them, you know, and that could do that to an innocent little boy and destroy so many lives.
It's interesting to hear Sonia talking about how important it is for her to be able to talk openly, to talk publicly about Brooklyn afterwards. And I suppose that's the whole point in the changes that they've made to the law, which came to effect on Friday. It sounds like it's an important part of the grieving process for Sonia. You've covered many cases. Is that the sense you get from people who feel they want to speak to the media outside court?
Yeah, by and large, I suppose it is. But, You know, there isn't one size fits all approach when it comes to how people deal with grief, particularly in these types of circumstances when somebody like Sonia loses such a special person in her life in such a cruel and untimely way. You know, some people have the impression that we chase people down the street after court looking for a comment, and that couldn't be further from the truth. You know, I'd never put pressure on someone like Sonia to talk about their experience, but I'm more than happy to give them that platform if they want it. Sonia did want it, and she was robbed of it at the time. She campaigned for change afterwards, and she can be very proud of what she helped to achieve.
I feel proud that I've done Brooklyn proud, and I'd like to thank the minister for replying back to me, you know, so quickly. And I do wish her the very best on her journey in motherhood. And it was done very fast, you know. So I'm grateful because it's a big, big weight lifted off, you know, that I can publicly speak about Brooklyn and, you know, not watch what I have to like put in Facebook or, you know, and there's so much that can be done in his memory.
Well, sadly, Sonia is not the first, and you fear that she won't be the last to lose a child in violent circumstances. But it must be some comfort to people who find themselves in that dreadful situation to once again be able to tell people about their loved one and how they live their lives as opposed to, I suppose, how those lives were taken.
Absolutely, Pat. And that's what this was all about. That's what it's always been about, you know, given the voiceless a voice. Brooklyn's voice was silenced in the most despicable of ways, but it was heard loud and clear through Sonia's words in court at the sentence hearing. She too felt silenced afterwards, but it really is great to hear her now talking about him so publicly. She's a remarkable woman, and I finished our chat by asking her how she's coping.
I'm doing good today. I have great supports, and I think connection and connecting with people is the best way to get through. To get through trauma and get through grief, and like speaking about your, for my case, my child, and speaking about what's going on for you and being honest, you know. I do have bad days, very, very bad days. And I just rest on those days, and I pray, I say little prayers to Brooklyn, and I go into church and I'd light a candle, you know. I have a completely different life now, you know, but I know Brooklyn is guiding me in the right direction. But it's not easy, because this is a new house that we got, and Brooklyn was in the house when we got it, and he picked out his bedroom and he picked out his bed. And then before we moved in, he tragically died. But he was in this house and he was in his room and he picked out the bed, and I feel him in here. I feel so safe in here, and I live here on my own, and I feel so safe all the time, you know, and I know that's him.
Sonia Elmer talking about how she's coping with her enormous loss. Finally, Frank, I know there is one group who deserve a mention for all the work that they did to make sure that these changes got across the line.
Yeah, during our chat, Sonia was particularly grateful to support after homicide. They campaigned hard behind the scenes to keep the pressure on. They made representations to the Minister for Justice, Helen McEntee, on Sonia's behalf and on behalf of other parents who also found themselves silenced these past few months. And another woman who deserves a mention today is Catherine Chadha. You may remember her husband, Sanjeev, is serving a life sentence for murdering their two boys, Rory and Owen, in 2013. And I know she's been very supportive of Sonia too, and she's also thrilled that she can once again speak publicly about her two boys. And I've spoken to them both on a number of occasions these past few months, and I know they're listening to us today, Pat, and, you know, I just want to say that they are both warriors. They deserve great credit for all the work they did to get these changes across the line.
All right, Frank, and thank you very much for bringing us Sonia's voice this morning.